Hello everyone and welcome back to the Cyclocross Social Podcast. Today we're going to be discussing the 7th round of the X2O Trophy, which took place in Lille. And that is Lille in Belgium and not in France. With me here to talk about that is Issam.
Yes, thank you for having me.
I'm already going to warn you, Issam, I have a couple of points on my paper. I got annoyed by a couple of things today, but let's start with a positive, because the men's race was actually highly exciting and we had a new winner at the highest level. The fastest start was for Thijs Aerts, he took the lead early on in the first lap and he really was going for it. He was getting his airtime, but once the storm, Thijs Aerts had calmed down, had been overtaken, been put back to where he belongs in 15th place, Joris Nieuwenhuis took the lead. Was a pretty cautious second lap of the race. There was a group of 7-ish leaders, not at the front of the race, in that big leading group though. Elisabeth, and the same went for his teammate, Michael van Tourenhout. Both had horrible starts. They were in 25th and 30th respectively. They spent the entire race chasing and would never really come back to the front of the race. From that leading group, a couple of riders were dropped. Adams, Orts, we ended up with 4 leaders. Those were the Balwazer Trek Lions duo, Nieuwenhuis, very hard, almost said Ronhaar there, but it was definitely Nieuwenhuis, together with Lars van der Haar. And then Joran Viseur was there together with Niels van der Putten. Van der Haar got dropped after a mistake, so we had 3 leaders in the second half of the race, until Nieuwenhuis crashed. Very weird corner. That put Nieuwenhuis on the back foot. He was with van der Haar again, they started chasing. Viseur was pacing up front with van der Putten sitting in the wheels. Nieuwenhuis managed to bridge the gap going into the penultimate lap. He put in the fastest lap of the race doing so. The penultimate lap was a bit cautious. There were no real attacks until the end, when Van der Putte, for the second time in the race, attacked in the final section of the course. He opened a small gap, Nieuwenhuis closed it, and we went into the final lap with 3 leaders. In this final lap, Viseur was the first one to attack. He had been looking like the weakest out of the 3. He placed an all-or-nothing attack. It ended up being nothing. On a long section along the pond, he got overtaken first by Nieuwenhuis and then also in the corner by Van der Putte. Nieuwenhuis set the pace, but it was not fast enough, because on the only section where Van der Putte could still make his move before the technical last section, Van der Putte attacked from behind the back of Nieuwenhuis. Van der Putte took the lead, put the pressure on, opened a small gap, and despite the best efforts of Nieuwenhuis, he couldn't close it. It was Van der Putte who took the final corner first, Nieuwenhuis sat up, Van der Putte took the win, his first really high-profile victory ahead of Nieuwenhuis, with 3rd place going to Joran Viseur. Pretty classical post-World Championships race, Issam. We've seen it a number of times in races like this, when there's the tiredness creeping in, there's a couple of younger riders that really want to show themselves. I mean, I recall a couple of seasons ago, Thibaut Nys ending 3rd in Oostmalle after a rough season in which he didn't get selected for Worlds. We've seen it in this very race here, when Van der Haar, in I think his 1st or 2nd season for back then Telenet Fidea, all of a sudden made an appearance. Van der Putte is a rider that's always good in this period of the season. I think for the past 2 seasons, post-World Championships, he's always been up there on the podium. I recall Brussels, I recall even this race. And today, he finished it off and it was very, very mature. Nieuwenhuis, to me, actually looked stronger. But first of all, that silly crash cost him. And then after that, in the final lap, I think he just wasn't hungry enough, because on that straight where he got passed by Van der Putte, that should never happen. He should have known to keep the pace high there. If he keeps the pace high there and doesn't look around waiting for something to come, he takes that final section of the course first, and he should have known that Van der Putte was way better than him in that section.
Yeah, totally. But I think that the race might have gone a little bit differently if he didn't have that crash, because then he maybe would have had a little bit more time to pick his moment in the race and put the others on the pressure. But I think now he was, you know, forced to chase back, and then from there's not a lot of laps left for him to do something. And I felt like he was not really prepared for any attack at that moment, and maybe didn't expect it or something. You know, for Nieuwenhuis, it was just a bit unfortunate, the crash, but very typical for an end of the season how his race went. And for Van der Putte, I think that he timed it perfectly. It was, as you said, a mature ride from his side. I definitely feel that it was a race where he, despite the fact that he definitely tried left and right a little bit, he was somewhat mature with the way he spent his energy throughout the race. And I think that he timed that last lap attack very well. And we have seen him in the midfield a couple of times in the last lap, making some moves and getting some positions. You know, he has that in him in a way. And I'm happy to see that he's able to do that now for a race win. Definitely deserves that. He's one of those, you know, younger riders that is trying to get to the top, and he definitely is one rider that has it in him to do so. He's a very technical rider. The way he also took a lot of risks with that attack and the way he went through the corners, it was a lot of times that you thought that is not going to end well. But luckily for him, it ended all well, and he made it stick. And, you know, it was a great ride from his side.
I never really had the feeling that it would go wrong simply because he's so insanely skilled. I mean, technically, it was excellent today, and especially in that final section of the course there, it was super special, like this short uphill on the right where 1 year Mio surpassed Nice. That section there was, like, the climb in the beginning of the race, he made some differences there, but especially that, like, S-style downhill corner after, his technique there was sublime. Like, he gained in the final lap a second and a half, maybe 2 seconds in that section of three movements of your steer, which is incredible. It was really, really good the way he was going down there. I think you were right that it didn't help that Nieuwenhuis crashed, but at the same time, I don't really think we can bring it in as an excuse because it was his own fault. It's not like he was unfortunate there. He just made a super silly mistake. I think he wasn't really in it today, or just too many things that just weren't really in its place. Maybe there was not that much on the line anymore for Nieuwenhuis, and it's like, oh well, it was his birthday, which apparently he doesn't care about. That's what he said. He thought he woke up yesterday and thought his birthday was yesterday, which is a pretty funny story. But yeah, I think for Nieuwenhuis, things just weren't in his place today. And for Van der Putte, he was hungry. He's always hungry in these races. He's a full-time cross rider. He's, I wouldn't necessarily call him the next Izebeet, but he's of the type Eli Izebeet. He is of a type of rider that in the future we will see start a season in September, October, and race all the way till the bitter end. That's a full-time cross rider right there, and it's overdue. It was known at some point that this rider would get his first major victory. Don't know if we can really, really call this major. I mean, he'll need to do it at some point in the November month as well, but it's still a step up from what he's done before. And his career path hasn't always been that smooth till where he came here. He was never really the biggest talent as a junior. He was good, he was up there, but he wasn't the best Belgian. He was always behind Jarno Bellens and Wietse Meeuwse. Gerben Kuipers, Anton Ferdinande, those were usually guys that were above him. I remember that he won the World Cup in Hogerheide the week before Valkenburg World Championships, 2018. And then in Valkenburg, the course completely didn't suit him. And then in his U23 years, there were always a couple of guys better. He was normally up there. He was 10th in Bogense. He's been 7th in Fightville. I don't remember where he was in Dubendorf, but I think that was also like around the 7 mark. He's been up there, but he was never really able to land a major victory. There were always other riders above him in the pecking order. In Fayetteville, as a final year in the World Cup, he was fighting against the Dutch guys. Hendricks was above him, Kamp was above him, Rolnar was above him in the pecking order. Verstringen, Viseuren, Nijs, there were always guys that came and went, and he was always there. But he developed super well in the 2 years after, which is arguably even more crucial. And it was eventually down the line we knew that this guy had it in him to win a cross like this. And I think by now we can also start saying the same about Joran Viseuresam. I mean, he does have that U23 world title, which was partially due to the efforts of Emil Verstringen there in Fayetteville. But Viseure, very strong season, today came close. I don't really think we can blame him for any tactical errors today. I mean, he was clearly the weakest out of the three up front. He attacked when he could, and then it leads to a third place. He can only be happy with that.
Yeah, and especially with the feeling that he had after yesterday, where I think his chain dropped, or at least it was not on, and then he had to retire from the race. And I feel that he made a big step forward in the category where he is kind of at, with also Verstring and also Van der Putte. I feel that he over the course of the season proved himself quite a lot. Today was, he tried to be up there, made his moves left and right, but as you said, was not the best out of the three. It was actually the that had to settle for third quite quickly, and I feel that it was definitely a very good race from his side, and to be able to do that at the end of the season and also have your moments somewhere mid-season, for him definitely more than for Van der Putte. I feel that he definitely can be very proud of how his season went, and he's also a guy that most likely will be in cyclocross from the beginning of the season. He does a road program in a way, but it's nothing special, and it seems that he will definitely prefer the cyclocross with the results that he is booking compared to what he is doing on the road. So I feel that, you know, for him as well, there is a career that in cyclocross that could be a very good one. But he's not that super talent, obviously, in a way, but you don't have to be one. You can always grow in your career, and I feel that definitely for both Van der Putte and Viseur, those guys have made their steps, and they have to, because the age is, they're getting at a certain point in their career that you have to make those steps and you have to show yourself in also these type of TV races. Because I think you said somewhere that, you know, how important is, or how big is this race in a way, but I feel that, you know, when it's a broadcasted race, and especially a race with this, it has some historic value in a way, Lille. I feel that it is definitely a race that, you know, that you wanna win, and that 100% will help you in your career, because that's race easily to refer to in a way. And I definitely feel that this will help him massively in terms of both personality, name. The people will remember him a little bit now. So I think that this definitely helps a rider, especially for someone like Van der Putte.
It definitely was not my intention to say this win or podium was worthless, because for both it definitely has meaning and every race is won. It's just more that when I'm trying to like place it talent-wise, I would still rate riders like Ronhaar and Nijs higher than Viseur and Van der Putte, and that's okay. I just like want to see them do this in November, like when the others are there as well, to like have an idea, hey, are these riders actually going to compete with Isebeet and Van Turenhout, or are they going to be slightly below? At the moment, I think slightly below, but on good days they can surprise, and I would just put them a tier below Ronhaar and Nijs talent-wise, but that's completely fine. And yeah, as you say, it's time for them to develop, because the question is, are you going to become this rider that's fighting for the 3-5 range, or you're gonna become a rider like Tom van den Bos. Van den Bos was also pretty hyped at some point when he became Belgian champion in Antwerp, and then it's not that he's having a bad career, but you're waiting for that next step to do what Van der Putte is doing, and for Van den Bos that has never come. He's almost always fighting for the 7-10 mark, which is still good, but it's not where Van der Putte and Viseur are at the moment. So yeah, just curious to that, but since the rest has been covered, let's look at the entire top 10. Behind the podium of Van der Putte, Nieuwenhuis and Viseur, we found Van der Haar. Van der Haar physically not really there the second half of the season. Technically today also just a few too many mistakes, but telling that he just misses out despite an attempt, a life jacket thrown at him by Nieuwenhuis to come back into the race in the second half. Did end ahead of Isebeet, Adams, Van Turenhout and then Mason in 8th. Finally, top 10 for Mason. It's not been a great second half of the season for him. Still going to add some nice money to his bank account by probably going to ending third in the X2O trophy, and somewhat of a good result just ahead of Orts and Van der Bos. But yeah, Issam, Isebeet and Van Turenhout. What was up there? I have a leading theory. At the start, we could see towards the back of the pack, Van Turenhout with Kamp. What do you think? Van Turenhout Kamp had that beef in Middelkerke. Were they going to talk it out with a cup of tea at the back? And did they hire Elisabeth as a lawyer to settle everything? Or what was on there? Because their start was horrible.
I hope they better have a reason for it, because it was not great. I mean, honestly, I don't know what they were thinking by having such a start. It was like, you can have a bad start, but there is most of the time a reason behind that. But I didn't really find the reason, and they also kind of took their time in the first lap and also kind of the second, and then moved up a little. Isebeet definitely tried to move up, but didn't really have those legs that he had yesterday, and came short. And Van Turenhout, was in that group with also Mason and Orts that then fell back. Orts that was a little ahead before in the beginning in the race, and then halfway through kind of fell back to that group with Mason as well. And I think that we have to believe them, or at least for Iserbeet, we have to believe him what he said before the race and also after the race yesterday, that, you know, he felt that he really had to dig deep to get that, to get that victory, and that he felt that his legs were maybe not, you know, recovered in the way that he would have loved to. And this is also a race where a 10 seconds here is not a 10 seconds in Baal, for example. You have to work harder to close a gap that is just a little smaller. And I feel that maybe it was a bit too ambitious to start the way they did. And I guess it's a good it's a good test for them to see what they can do. And yeah, it's the end of the season, so the focus is maybe not really there at the moment, and the legs sometimes will not always respond the way you would have liked, and the fatigue is kicking in. And, you know, I think for those both guys, they tried to be up there, but they were not there. And for both, they will have their chance next week, and then season is over.
Yeah, it's definitely coming to an end now. And for me, it looks like the typical end of season where you see, oh, the focus isn't really there, or there's some mistake at the start, or we get boxed in, or not really the eagerness, the hungriness is there. And then, I mean, they rode a strong recovery race. I mean, they chased pretty hard, and it was definitely not bad. The form that Iserbeet and Van Turenhout put out, but wasn't really there. I do have one thing in some, and something that's been bothering me for a while now. It's only been getting worse and worse. Mees Hendricks, he is for Crelan-Corendon. I don't have anything against this guy. Let me put that first. We've interviewed him on the podcast a couple of seasons ago. He seems like a genuinely nice guy. He got selected for the World Championships by Gerben de Knecht. He didn't meet the criteria of 2 times top 16 in a World Cup. I think this season he didn't ride a single top 16 in a World Cup. He got selected, benefit of the doubt, because there were always things going wrong for him, according to de Knecht. Bad start, bad course, whatever. Today, none of that. No excuses for Hendricks. The course was good for him. He had a very good start. He was up there in second, third position. He ends 18th. De Knecht is making a very big deal out of it that Mees Hendricks doesn't have a contract for next season. Hendricks is not going to be extended by Crelan-Corendon. And honestly, if I look at his past 2 seasons, I can only say that's completely deserved. The last season, it was not much better. This guy has shown that he has talent in the youth categories. I mean, he had that phase where he was without a contract in the black kit, ended on the podium in Dubendorf, and then got picked up by Crelan, where he is now. Like, he had that period when he showed he was good. But for the past 2 seasons, he hasn't shown it. And to come in, oh, but he won the World Cup, U23, as a 4th year, which was completely unrepresentative World Cup due to COVID and stuff. And then, oh, in 2020, he was 3rd at the World Championships. Like, we're in 2024 now. To me, the complaining about this, and I think de Knecht is very capable at doing his job as a national team coach, and I've spoken with him a couple of times. I think he's a very nice guy. I think he does his job well. But then the complaining from the Dutch side, which has been pretty loud this year, about we don't have enough budget for our cross program, our riders are struggling, how can Kamp not have a team, how can Hendricks not have a team? Kamp, for what it's worth, is just going to be reeled into the Alpecin structure. He's on their road team already. Hendricks, in all honesty, just doesn't deserve it. I'm not worried that Hendricks doesn't have a contract. I'm worried about way more stuff than that the Dutch, out of all countries, are complaining about the money and everything. If I look at the state in other countries, that's what it just bothers me. You have Zemanova, who says she has an offer from a European team, but the money they offered her was laughable, that she earns more at Bilron MTB. Gladonova, there's no perspective for her, even though she ends 3rd, whereas Chanel de Schoesitter, who ends 18th, has a contract with Paul Sauz already. It's far worse in international states. If you look at the budget they need to scrape in Italy to support Vietzi, at the way the money is being spent in Spain, at the state of Swiss cyclocross, of German cyclocross, the best riders from those countries struggling to get a ride, that's where actually the pain in cross is. For me, the pain in cross is simply not at Mees Hendricks not getting a contract, because quite frankly, yeah, nothing against this guy, but if you look at it from just a performance perspective, He doesn't deserve it. If I don't deliver for 2 years in a row at my job, I fail to miss all my targets, I'm also not going to be extended. I might even be fired after a year and a half.
I agree with all the points that you pointed out. And, you know, it is an issue. And it is an issue that we experiencing every year in a way. And some years it's a little worse than others. But the structure at the moment in cyclocross is definitely not ideal, and especially if you are not having a nationality that it's Dutch or Belgium, then it's also going to become way more difficult to find a team. And in a way, it's understandable. Eh? I mean, you have to understand that the biggest teams are, most of them are from Belgium. The sponsors are, most of them have the interest in Dutch and Belgian riders. And therefore, either has to come from something like the transfer, for example, of Cameron Mason to Cyclocross Reds is definitely a transfer that, you know, on paper doesn't look very shocking, but still it's quite a commitment from them to sign a British rider. It's not a normal signing in a way, despite the fact that it is actually, you know, if you look at the results and the performances, of course Mason is not really having the greatest of results at the moment, but overall if you look at his season, definitely had very good moments. Great moments even, and that was a rider that didn't really have a place in cyclocross for a moment. So that is not the way it should be going. That's also something that should be worked on, but it is difficult to work on. And then you have to look, should there be any quotas? Should UCI step in and do something? I don't know. It's difficult, and I don't have a solution right now. It is at the moment not the ideal situation, and it is eventually going to hamper the internationalization of cyclocross, and it's not going to help at all by having more nationalities in the top 10, both on the men's side and the women's side.
You're completely right that it makes sense for Belgian teams to sign the Belgian riders, but that's also why I want to make a small side note for the signing of Mason, because he signed to the Cyclocross Reds, which is pretty much still 777 Bet. That's a British company, so for them it makes more sense to have the British riders Kay and Mason on their team, simply because their sponsor is actually a British owned company. But you're right, it's still a good sign, and I mean, Alpecin does have a bit of the history that they do pick up a couple of riders from outside of Belgium. I mean, I remember they had, oh, now I need to think hard, they had the French rider U23 on their team a couple of seasons ago, I just can't think of the name, it might come in a bit, but they had him, Tupalik has been on it when it was still CCP Corendon. They have a bit more of a history there, but whereas I think it would be good if there would be a Dutch team created for riders like Kamp and Hendricks, at the same time, for me, it's not the priority, and I guess if I would just need to summarize my frustrations, it's with the Netherlands, which is probably the country with the second largest cyclocross budget out there. For me, those complaints from that country so vocally just kind of is like misplaced if I look at the situation. Of course, I get that probably De Knecht is comparing like his situation to the Belgian situation, and in Belgium there appear to be almost unlimited funds. So I get that he's maybe in like a different league. He's maybe playing Champions League against the Belgian team and say like, hey, I also want money to go training in Spain. I also want money to do this or that, what Belgium is doing. That's maybe where his complaints are coming from, and that he's comparing it like, hey, my riders don't get the same treatment from Belgium. So then I guess in that sense, it makes like a lot of sense. So maybe I'm just placing like the comments there the entire season in the wrong context. But to me, like, as loudly as those complaints have been written up by the media, there's zero of those complaints being written from the United States or from Spain, or I just named a bunch of other countries, Slovakia. Like, that's probably where my frustration lies. It lies in between that field. So if the Knecht really is just like, hey, I need more money to compete with Belgium on the long term, I can see it. But to me, it came more across as, hey, we're in a horrible position. Whereas I think that's completely unfair. Enough complaining, it's time to go to the women's race, because the best rider in the world of the season, the world champion Femme Van Empel, took the start for the final time this season. We had a bit of doubts in our podcast yesterday, and it turned out that start list was super inaccurate. Casasola not there, Baxet not there, but Van Empel was there, and she meant business. Already in the first lap, she opened the gap over everyone else and soloed towards victory. It's a super impressive season for Van Empel. She also secured the victory in the X2O trophy. She only lost two races this season. She lost Havre and Hulst. It was just a walkover season. Really, really good season by her. Second place went to Brandt, and Verdonschot recovered to a third place, getting her duck, which was a big goal for her. Isam, Femme Van Empel. Don't really think we can say much over the season. Or, well, we can say a lot about the season, how good it was. We did that in the World Championships podcast. We can't really say much over the race today, since it was just dominant, better than the rest. But another thing, I'll come to my complaints in a bit, but they laid out she will do a road season, and then she'll start in Gent-Wevelgem, and her second race will be the Tour of Flanders. And they want her to be ready to race the final alongside Marianne Vos in both races. Your thoughts on that?
I have to say that it is something. It is better than what we saw at the time than Jumbo-Visma and Van Empel in terms of what the road program was there. But yeah, then you can also say they were focusing more on the mountain biking stuff and so forth. But yeah, I don't know what to make up for it. I think Gent-Wevelgem is normally a race where I don't really see Van Empel do something, I would say. You know, it could always be a very close race, and then I think it's kind of a waste of racing there. I would have loved another race, but it's not a bad preparation towards the Tour of Flanders, and I think that it's not a terrible two races to start, in my opinion, kind of a real start for her road career. With the pros, I would say, because I don't really count what happened last year. That was, in my opinion, not really it. This, for me, is more a debut for Van Empel, and I'm interested to see what she can do. But I think that the approach is a bit amateuristic, and also the way they talk about it, it's a bit, I don't know. I'm not that hyped about it, and I would have been if it was a more structured program, and I feel now that is not really the case. But I don't know how you think about it.
I would even say the opposite, that it's not necessarily amateuristic, but more absurd levels of professionalism and pure levels of spreadsheet thinking, and not actually thinking about what you need on the road. And this goes further than just Jan Bove today, but Jos van Emden, who's now in charge of Jumbo-Visma Women, has been very vocal in interviews bashing Ezra Tromp, who was the former leader of the women's team, saying that they denied to make the team professional, that they were just amateurs there. And last year, I mean, I'm not a fan of the approach of Van Empel there, but I don't like this trash talking either, because from the sources that I've heard, and I've heard this in the AD podcast and Wielerflits as well, they said that for Visma, their women's team just wasn't a priority. They just didn't really care about it. They were only focused on the men's team, and that's changed this year. Tromp repeatedly asked for better levels of support, but didn't get it, also didn't have the budget. So for Van Emden to trash talk Tromp and the former female management of the Jumbo-Visma women's team is a low blow, and I'm not a fan of it. And now they can talk about, oh, training camps this and training camps that, but you don't buy positioning skills in training camp. You can't buy that with a bag of money. Van Empel, we saw it last year in the Brabantse Pijl, she's not really capable of positioning herself. And in the Tour of Flanders, that's crucial. There's going to be a big rush to the Koppenberg. So it's vitally important for Van Empel to race Omloop het Nieuwsblad, so she knows how that rush feels. She can race Strade. She can race other one-day races just to have a feel, because she doesn't have that from last year. She did a bunch of stage races, and those are inherently different from the work she's going to be doing on the road now. If you look at how highly they talk about that, oh, we don't race much, like, it works for Vingegaard, and completely fair for Vingegaard. It's a GC rider. the mountains is as much as you can recreate in the lab, pushing the watts and staying on your bike. But you see, with riders like Jay Fine, if you crash a ton, it's also going to hurt you. It can work for an experienced rider like Van Aert to skip a bunch of races, but Van Empel needs to gain that experience. If you look at Pietersen, they do the complete opposite with her. Pietersen and Van Empel, nemesis in cyclocross. Last year, oh no, Van Empel can't start in Strade, she will never be ready. We're not even Tour Flanders, it's too early. Pietersen just tells her team, well, I would like this to ride Strade. They say, okay, you race 1 week before and then you do Strade the week after. Apparently they're planning the same this year. I'm not really a fan of that for the Olympic reasons. So you need to find a balance there, but how highly they speak about their, oh, we don't race much program, I don't really see it when you at the same time have riders like Pietersen just going with the flow and getting very good results. I mean, you could argue that you need to find a balance between them, but I wasn't really a fan of that style of presenting it and that level of low blows at the former leadership.
What I really meant with the amateuristic approach is more in terms of the preparation towards it and not so much questioning the way FISMA has their way of you know, preparing their riders. I think that definitely is probably one of the most professional approach that you can have in the pro peloton. So, you know, in that regard, I definitely don't question them. But I think that, you know, the points that you brought up definitely are the things that I also have my doubts about. And as you stated, last year wasn't great, and one of the things that didn't really go well was definitely placing yourself in a good position the moments that counted. And guess what, Tour Flanders is all about that, all about positioning yourself at the right moments and the amount of energy that you spend before you enter the final. And when you are in the final, then you maybe realize, oh, I have maybe spent a little bit too much, and you're not going to be able to follow the important attacks and the attacks that could lead to potential podium victory, whatever. That is something that really bothers me in a way. And I don't know. Again, I'm not really going to put any expectations on what Van Empel can do in both Gent-Wevelgem and Tour Flanders. For me, it's, you know, it's going to be interesting to follow, but it's so hard to judge where that will end up. And I hope that for the best, and just the racing itself and Van Empel, I really hope that she can perform well and get a top 10 or a top 5 or maybe get herself on the podium, whatever is possible. But I feel that is going to be quite hard with the preparation that she's going to do.
Yeah, we will need to wait and see. I think she has the potential to do very well on the road. I can definitely see that in her. So let's hope that really comes out this season, or maybe after, or maybe later in the Tour de France Femme, whatever. So yeah, let's hope the best comes from that. We should probably give some attention to the top 10 today. It was Van Empel to Brandt, Verdonschot, Worst, Bentveld, Kant, Bakker, Riberol, Van Alphen, Frank. It's pretty much the same as what we discussed yesterday in Middelkerke, so don't really want to repeat too much. Worst is still having issues. It's the end of the season, a lot of the stuff is coming out about the injuries, Worst knee and the back, everything that's been kept for themselves is coming out now. Van der Heide ended her season with physical issues, Betsema still struggling with physical issues, she was 12th, Zweig on the men's side have some long COVID issues which are influencing him in this part of the season. It's been a long season, and you can see Bakker, Van Alphen, after Val di Sol for Bakker, for Van Alphen, pretty much since the start of December, not really able to turn things around anymore. Bentveld is doing all right in these races, so I think the only one that we really want to point out there is some for me is Kant. Was an okay race by her in front of her home crowd. Personally, if I were Kant, I would start calling it a day and focus on Paris-Roubaix, hopefully have a good final race there to end like the circle from that horrible crash she had last year when that disc brake cut open her face completely.
Yeah, indeed. I think that is definitely what would be the best for her. Eh? I mean, I think that is, call it a day now. There's not much to gain in the next week. I don't know how she is in the X2O trophy standings. So maybe only for that reason, I don't know, to also participate in Brussels. But overall, I definitely feel that if you have your priority on the road, this is a great moment to call it a day for the cyclocross season and just focus fully on the road. And it's going to be interesting because, as you said, you know, Paris-Roubaix up until that crash definitely went very well. And what a story that would be if she was able to get back to that particular race and perform at the best. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how she will go through the road season. But, yeah, if you talk about cyclocross season, I definitely think that calling it off now is not a bad choice.
She's, I think, 7th in that X2O trophy. She can still move to 6th, but personally, I wouldn't really bother too much. I mean, I'm pretty sure Gant has a royal salary at her team and just for her reputation and everything. So it seems to me like time to focus on the rest. And yeah, the rest was kind of everything in its way. I expect 2 victories for Brandt next week. And yeah, in terms of what's coming up, we'll be offering you a podcast this week. That will be an interview with one of the rising stars in the sport, Imogen Wolf. That will be available on Thursday for you. And then next week, we are going to do the final podcast of the season, which will cover the Exact Cross in Sydney Class and the X2O Trophy in Brussels. That will be a combined episode in which we discuss the comeback of Don Aerts. I know you dearly look forward to that, Issa.
Oh, well, we will talk about it when it happens, I would say.
We'll keep that for next week. It's going to definitely be interesting. And yeah, let's leave that cliffhanger on your thoughts in there for the listeners. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, Issam, for being here. We will be back next week. Goodbye.